show is a proud member of Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Clones to the left of me, jokers to the right, and I'm stuck in the middle. Where?
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here are your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama, the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. This is a special episode for whatever day we release it, because I don't know when that is, or even for what day.
Whatever day you listen to it, maybe.
Then it's now. Or we recorded it then. Whatever it is. I'm Chuck Tomasi, and with me is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm good, man. I'm like really excited today.
Why are you excited?
Because we get to talk to JC. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
We've got JC Hutchins, author of Seventh Son Trilogy, on the line. We talked to him quite some time ago, but there's been late breaking news, which I'm sure many of our listeners already know. But if you don't know who he is, we'll introduce you to JC, his story, where it's going, and then we honestly have no idea where this interview will go after that, because none of this is scripted, it's all off the cuff, it could take 10 minutes and we're done, or it could be an hour and a half. For that,
so place your bets now.
How are you, JC?
Well, hey everybody, JC Hutchins here.
Wait, hey, I feel like I should play our Kilroy Sweeper bumper ID thing that you made for us. That's great. Oh,
you don't need to play a bumper. I'm always here.
He's everywhere.
Like Chicken Man.
How are you guys doing? It is an absolute pleasure to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
We're doing awesome. How about yourself?
Doing good. Working hard, doing everything I can to tell the world about my current project. But and aside from that, like getting very little sleep. So if you know, I'm a little discombobulated these days. So, this might be a really great interview.
Now, lack of sleep means you've either got a really big project or a new child.
Well, yeah, this is a child with a 7-year gestation period. So,
yeah. Yikes. Yeah,
right. What a whopper.
I think elephants are only like 2 years.
Yeah. Well, I'm a, yeah, well, it's a miracle. It's a miracle. This Seventh Son book that I wrote, it's a Christmas miracle that it's actually in print. And I guess being a man, the gestation period takes longer than that of a woman.
Well, let's start at the beginning.
Hey, women, in JC's yard, he's got 7 storks out in the yard with, they're here.
Those are plastic flamingos. Let's start at the beginning and tell I think we have one listener that may not know what Seventh Son is, so we'll be kind and rewind.
Well, bless you, and for all the listeners who do know about Seventh Son, thank you for indulging me for a minute. Seventh Son was like a high tech thriller that I started writing in 2002, and it's about human cloning and implanted recorded human memories and government conspiracy theories and a villain that would make Cobra Commander wet the bed. lots of action and cliffhangers and excitement, at least I thought so. And I wanted to write a book that was really, really big and really, really, really epic in kind of scope. And started writing and finished writing it in 2004, 2 years later, and then spent several months polishing it in 2005, and then presenting it to literary agents in 2005, because this is how the publishing game is played. You guys probably know a little bit about this, where you can't present your book to publishers anymore. There are now, they require middlemen, which are literary agents who know the editors and take the editors to lunch and bribe them with whatever they schmooze and do whatever they do.
I have these pictures that you don't want out.
So I start pitching in 2005, and it goes nowhere. Now, the book that I'd written was 1,200 pages long. Most thrillers are clock in at around 400 pages. So it's probably a combination of the length that turned off literary agents, and maybe even like the kind of the genre mashup that is Seventh Son, because it's got a lot of kind of like genres and subgenres kind of swimming around in the story. Mm-hmm. And by the end of that year, I was pretty crestfallen, but I'd been exposed to podcasting during 2005, including you guys, and was like, well, let's see what I can do with this whole podcast novel thing that's emerging. You know, folks like Scott Sigler, T. Morris, Mark Jeffrey, we know kind of like the golden age of podcast novels and those trailblazers. Well, I was watching them closely, and I realized, well, heck, if I can't sell the damn thing, I'll share it. And I started recording Seventh Son in 2006, and here we are three and a half years later, and the book is actually on bookstore bookshelves. It actually happened.
How cool is that?
I still can't believe it happened, dude.
Doesn't that just blow your mind to see your name on the cover of something in a store?
Yeah.
You know, it's so funny. I've been so busy, I have yet to actually make it to a bookstore to see the book.
I hear you there. It took me almost a year to get to Barnes & Noble to see the Dummies book.
You know, yeah, I wrote that little foreword in the Podcasting for Dummies, and I had to go and look at it myself the next day it came out.
He's camped out overnight like one of those Star Wars movies.
Yeah, like an iPhone, yeah. Well, you know, and that's – and I feel so damn bad about it because, I mean, for whatever reason, I know that once I see the book on the shelf, like you guys, like it's going to – you know, it's going to be real. Until then, it still kind of feels like a dream. And a side of me feels bad for not being able to have the time to do that. And another side of me is like, well, you know what? I kind of like the fact that it doesn't feel quite real, so I can just keep, so that the feeling of accomplishment isn't there yet, so I can keep working.
The honeymoon phase.
Yeah. What I was trying to get at was I felt like Steve Martin in The Jerk. I'm in the phone book.
But it is but there is absolutely a reason to be proud. I mean, you guys know this, and probably, you know, your listeners who've been kind of initiated into, you know, the whole, you know, podcasting and tech scene, and probably to a degree the podcast novel, you know, experience, you know, it's pretty clear that it is ultra competitive and ultra hard to get a book into print. So the fact that, you know, you're both on a bookstore bookshelf, I mean, that's no small feat.
Well, thank you. We do feel very fortunate in the way that we broke into it, sort of like, hey, come on along, little brother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Yeah. You, on the other hand, you've taken the tiger by the tail and said, look, here's what I've got, by releasing to the public, and said, here's a pre-built audience. Now, do you want to talk print or not?
Yeah. It was so interesting with Seventh Son, because even that really wasn't the catalyst. I mean, that indirectly was the catalyst for Seventh Son getting into print. I don't know. You guys probably know of a podcaster named David Moldauer, and he is one of the co-hosts. Yeah, he's one of the co-hosts of the Kick-Ass Mystic Ninjas. And way back in 2005 and 2006, he was actually a book critic for The Dragon Page, which is, your listeners probably are very familiar with this podcast that covers the speculative fiction publishing scene. You know, mm-hmm. and so I, like, way back in 2006, before I even launched Seventh Son, I asked him, hey, you know, would you mind being, as a book critic, would you mind listening to the first few episodes of my book? And if you like it, you know, post something positive. I'm trying to drive up some buzz before, you know, for the book. He said, sure. Right. And became a fan of Seventh Son. Now, I build my audience with Seventh Son, blah, blah, blah. I'm shaking my booty and people are liking it. And then I get a call in like mid 2007, out of the blue from David Moldauer, who starts the conversation by saying, I'm an editor at St. Martin's Press.
Oh.
At which point I wanted to say, Son of a bitch! Why didn't you tell me that years ago?
I would have sent you better Christmas presents.
That's exactly right. Yeah, chocolates every Friday. And he actually came to me and he said, "Look, you know, I love your stuff. You've got a built-in audience. You seem to be a good thriller writer. Would you like to hop aboard this for-hire supernatural thriller novel project that we've got cooking called Personal Effects?" And I said, "Sure." And that got me in the door with St. Martin's Press for Personal Effects, which came out, months ago. And then I was able to leverage that relationship to, present Seventh Son to David Moldauer, who then mm-hmm. presented it to, boom, 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 the Star Chamber there, right? And and they gave the thumbs up for the first book going into print. So, it's kind of nutty. I'm not even entirely convinced that if I hadn't have emailed David Moldauer back in February of 2006, if this book still wouldn't be in print.
Still shopping it around.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Out on the street. Anyone want a book?
So how things been now that, I guess both of them are released, but how, start with Seventh Son and then talk about Dark Arts, but since they both came out, what the reaction was, and I guess, I don't know if you really want to talk about sales pretty much, but how's that turned out?
Yeah. My publisher is doing this whole we cannot do not talk about sales, and I want to and I want to play nice with them because mm-hmm. I want to maintain a positive relationship, but sure. I can give some context here. Boy, howdy! When it came to Seventh Son being released in print, especially on the first day of its release on October 27th, fans crawled out of the woodwork to support the novel. A great many of them went into bookstores, but even more of them went on Amazon.com. I didn't have a formal Amazon rush, that kind of strategy that has been well established in the podcast mm-hmm. novel community. I didn't have one of those formally, but people didn't seem to care. They just wanted to support it on day one. And we were like a Titan rocket in the charts and screamed up all of the appropriate genres like sci-fi and thriller and sci-fi fantasy, mystery and thriller, movers and shakers, hot new releases, blah blah blah. I mean, it was for one day I felt like a rock star, right? and then of course I had to do the dishes, so
I drink like a rock star, that's about it.
Yeah, exactly. And so and week one and going into week two purchases, where mostly these were my fans coming and buying the book, have been really, really robust. Now, because most of my community has purchased the book, it's up to me and them to a lesser extent, but it's up to me to take the message of Seventh Son well beyond our little geeky community that is filled with awesome. But I've saturated that space, and that's why conversations with you guys and your audience are so important, and other outreach that I'm doing, because the key to this book's success, and frankly the key to the sequels getting into print, because they have not been purchased for print, is successful sales, and that is determined by sustained sales. So I'm doing everything I can to, I don't know what I'm gonna have to do to get on Charlie Rose, but by God, I'm gonna try.
Well, you've been doing a lot of things that are rather innovative. With Dark Arts, you did the transmedia thing. I mean, it wasn't just in print; there was a website. There was mm-hmm. it was as if the characters in the books really did exist and were among us. And then with leading up to the Seventh Son release, you had Seventh Son, 7 Days, the prequel stories, and thanks for throwing in our mashup mention in there too.
Yeah. What was it, Craig Tomasi? That was the name of the character.
We helped. What was it? John composes music or something. He borrowed our studio or something.
Yes, that's exactly it. you were broke independent artists, which is
an Indian one, wasn't it?
Which is probably accurate.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, we're broke, all right.
So yeah, I think that's how you're going to wind up on Charlie Rose. You keep doing these things that nobody's done or thought of before, a new twist on something that's right in front of their face, and people go, "Wow, okay, that works."
Yeah. And first off, thanks for saying that. And kind of recognizing that. I'm not trying to do it for the glory. I'm just trying to have as much fun as I can and have my peeps, my community have a lot of fun too. When I do this kind of outreach, and it's kind of what I'm focusing on these days. I mean, I'd love to be writing fiction, but I've got a book to sell here, so I gotta promote it. I've been examining what I've done over the past few years to promote my stuff, and particularly what I'm doing now. I'm not ego tripping when I say this, but you're right. Your observation is right. Like, there's lots of like stuff that I've been doing that no one else has been doing. And when I pitch these big fish on my story, right, the J.C. Hutchins from podcast to print story, it's jam packed with those interesting firsts, as it were, because. I mean, why not try to leverage not just the strength of the Seventh Son story, but the strength of social media and having a direct connection with your audience? I mean, people like us kind of take that for granted because it comes second nature to us. And particularly because we've been doing it for years, but I mean, it's still a very disruptive and kind of WTF kind of thing that a lot of mainstreamers mm-hmm. just don't understand. Why would I want to connect directly with my fans? Meanwhile, people like us are saying, "What? How can I not?"
Right. That's right. And that's fine with us. Stephen King, you can stay over there.
Uber's on Twitter.
and here's hoping that our kind of new breed of entertainment, not only in the online space, but to a degree in our interactions on, let's say, Twitter or Facebook, which are very public, we will be empowered someday to eat the lunch of those people that are that crave the ivory tower, because that model isn't going to last very long. I mean, I don't think that you can kind of exist. You certainly can't come up in this space anymore without that kind of outreach and connection to your audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, social networking really does play a huge part in this, and I think some of us are still trying to wrap our brains around how to best leverage that, whether it's for your own work or your brand, whatever, have customer service. There's so many avenues this thing can take. It's very nebulous right now.
And the hyper informality of it is also kind of adds some confusion. And this is just me kind of deep geeking on Twitter for a minute, but I've been on Twitter, nearly 3 years however long, like it came out and then like 6 months later I was on board and I've been tweeting ever since. And, the interesting thing about Twitter is that it's a great way to, spread memes fast. It's a great way to connect with people quickly, directly, communicate with them. But, if you are obsessed with your so-called personal brand, you've got to be real careful about what you say because of the hyper informality and the almost instant messenger quality that it has taken in recent years. I spout off offensive stuff all the time. I'm either cussing or shaking my fist at someone. The man, right? Or it's like, oh, I spotted a racist, everybody. I'm unfollowing, whatever it could be. And just being, kind of peculiar, and just being myself. But you might, if you're concerned about brand, that kind of behavior may not, it will either serve you well, right? Or it will backfire on you. And I mean, it's too kind of early to tell, what's happening there, but it's a completely different kind of dynamic that, that we're going to have to kind of deal with in the years ahead.
Well, in some ways I envy you that you can just go out and speak your mind, whereas I'm constantly got a sensor filter on. Would I want my mom seeing this? Would I want my boss seeing this?
Kind of things. Yeah.
So yeah, I'm one of those people that's worried about brand.
Right. Well, I'm mostly concerned with my girlfriend reading my Twitter stream and seeing me flirt with other ladies.
I've actually forwarded some of your messages. Sorry. No, but I do the same thing. I try to take a middle of the road. Sometimes I'll say stuff that on my mind, but other times I try to play it where, you know, I don't want to be too offensive on there, because I do try to treat, and this is my stance on Twitter, you know, all the people that I'm either following or following me, you know, I try to be a friend to anybody. I mean, I treat them like I would in person.
So you're saying you're a suck up?
Yes. No.
No.
No, but I try to treat everybody like I do in person, you know. But
I know.
I treat them the same respect. So, you know, I try to take the middle line. It's not really a brand so much as, you know, I do care about what people think about me. Unlike Jason.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Well, you know, and that's the thing is, I mean, and I do, you know, and I don't know what it is. And I'm not trying to sound like a jerk, but there just comes a point where I felt, particularly if you're a longtime listener of my work, for the first 2 years of my podcasting career, I did, I was, hey, everybody. And I had my thumbs up all the time. And I was saying, golly gee willikers. And yeah. that is an absolute, I mean, that is absolutely a part of my personality. I try to have unbridled optimism at every turn. Mm-hmm. But I sensed going into like 2008 that people were fundamentally disconnecting with the fact that the persona that I had in my podcast is actually how I am in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And while in it's kind of like if you listen to like Scott Sigler, for instance, the man is a raging egomaniac on his podcast.
We met him at Dragon Con. He is. <Just kidding.
laughs> and he is less so and far friendlier in yeah. real life in his everyday. I hope I'm not destroying anyone's kind of perception of the man, but he does indeed convert oxygen into carbon dioxide and is human.
Yep.
As am I. And so what I, you know, decided to do was, well, look, you know, if the only I have to kind of alter people's perspectives here, and the best way to alter people's perspectives is to be myself. And like you, Craig, I mean, I'm consistently, you know, biting the Twitter tongue, you know. I mean, yeah. Like if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. I try to avoid, you know, debates on Twitter and like saying snarky things to specific people on Twitter. I rather go the passive aggressive route by just kind of like saying, oh, someone farted.
Yeah, right.
And just kind of leaving it at that.
Well, now back up a bit. Tell us a bit about your background, because Craig and I have been geeks for what, close to 30 years in computers and whatnot. And podcasting came along. It was just a natural extension to say, hey, that looks fun, hook up an RSS feed and get some audio out there. How did that, was it a discontinuity in your psyche, or did you just flow right into it and go, that's what I see as a way to go?
Well, it might have been a natural deduction to embrace podcasting for me, but it was an absolutely unnatural act and an unnatural and very disruptive element to my life. I wasn't tech savvy. I was a technology neophyte back in 2005. I poked around the internet, but I was a TV junkie and a book reader and a movie junkie and wasn't wired to the web. It wasn't until I started listening to podcasts that I started to skew towards the web as a source of like helpful information because these podcasts were suddenly speaking my language. You know, I was mm-hmm. I was a science fiction fan.
I've seen your amateur video work. Yes, I know you are. I'll talk about that in a second.
Oh, yeah, rock and roll. But you know, well, I'm a sci-fi fan. For instance, this was back in 2005. But I couldn't turn on the radio and listen to people speaking my language and giving thoughtful commentary on sci-fi news or reviews or you know properties. The same thing goes for a couple of other interests that I had. But now suddenly, thanks to this kind of technological breakthrough or, you know, innovation, I'm able to listen to this stuff on my iPod. When I decided to move into, you know, podcasting, I mean, I was all thumbs. All I knew how to do was sync my iPod, man. That's all. Mm-hmm. However, because I was a newspaper journalist for several years, a study to be a newspaper reporter back in college and high school, I knew how to do research. And so I did a lot of research on podcasting and, you know, kind of like what your podcasting setup would be and how to do an RSS feed and all that stuff. I did a lot of front end planning before I decided to kind of flip the switch and dive in. And then after I dove in, I was all thumbs with my, you know, with the technology and all thumbs with my performance and presentation in my podcast, and all thumbs with my marketing for, you know, and outreach for a good while there. So, I just kind of took the plunge and prayed that, you know, and just committed myself to it and committed myself to learning the ropes as I went.
As opposed to us who jumped in and then found they couldn't swim.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Yeah, but you guys, but you know, kind of in contrast, you know, you guys were kind of initiated as you know, Craig, I know you're a programmer. You've saved my mm-hmm. bacon a couple of times, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, a programmer, and you know, and this may have been a far more kind of you know, less risky, or at least emotionally risky, mm-hmm. commitment for you guys, but for me it was like, oh my, I was biting my nails down to the quick. Oh my gosh, can I do it?
Well, you know, for me, for a long time, I wanted to do radio. I wanted to do like a morning show or something like that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm kind of half and half. I feel like I'm a creative on one half, but I'm a programmer and analytical kind of person on the other hand. And in the middle, they got to meet somewhere, and that's where the podcasting comes from. You know, because I really wanted to do radio and be funny guy on the radio, and then I wanted to do programming, and money is on the programming computer side. So
one pays the bills.
Yeah, one pays the bills. So now podcasting, you know, it kind of meets somewhere. So,
well, and you get to talk and you're completely empowered to talk about your interests.
Yes. Yeah. Any interest. Yeah.
How were you introduced to podcasting?
In 2005, I bought my iPod. It was like a third generation iPod. It was like the generation after the click, you know, the plastic spinnable wheel, right? Mm-hmm. And I was kind of poking around, and I dutifully did everything that you were supposed to do. I ripped the CDs and I put them on the computer, and I'm listening to my music, and I was also an Audible subscriber, and I was listening to audiobooks, and I still can't, to this day, I can't remember how I came across this this New York Times story, but it was, I read it online, and the columnist received the question, what else can I do with my iPod other than listen to music? and then he talked about this thing called podcasting. And I was so kind of, and for whatever reason, it just triggered this, huh, this sounds really neat. I mean, yeah. And then I just kind of went from there. So, you know, and I immediately subscribed to, like, you know, the Dragon Page and Podcast 411, which was an interview show. It's mm-hmm. I think it's faded now, but it's an interview show for podcasters. And that was a very helpful podcast to listen to, because that turned me on to the works of the podcasters who were being interviewed, and mm-hmm. kind of went from there. Yeah.
Well, you know, for me, I remember I was looking at Slashdot or something like that, and I was reading an article, and I saw the word podcast just kind of nonchalantly thrown out there, and I went, wait, I focused on that word, and I went, what's that? Podcasting, you know, that's kind of where, that was my downfall.
You took the red pill.
6 years later.
Yeah, no. You know, and do you guys ever feel that? Do you ever have those days when you're like, why, oh, why didn't I take the blue pill?
Never.
Daily.
No. Never. We wouldn't get to do this kind of stuff.
You're right.
This is where the fun is. Reach out and I think about it. You've probably thought about this too. There's hardly a corner of the globe where you couldn't go where someone says, hey, you're coming to my neighborhood. Why not, you know, stop by and say hi, or do you have time for a cup of coffee or something? Mm-hmm. Everywhere you go, there's somebody who you've already met, if not in person, which I just, that blows me away. That wouldn't have been possible without podcasting.
Me too. I absolutely agree. And there's something immediate and intimate about the human voice and this experience of either, you know, having a conversation or listening to a conversation. And certainly when it comes to, you know, podcast novels, being told a story. And so I think that, you know, even though that, you know, podcasting has kind of evolved from being like the ultra buzzword of 2000, let's say six, mm-hmm. 2005, 2006, to something a little more sedate and a kind of a more mature kind of space. And mm-hmm. blogging is kind of, you know, blogging is kind of back, so-called on the rise. This is the stuff that you just simply cannot effectively or efficiently convey in a blog post. I mean, you know, a back and forth like this would take hours to kind of write and edit and release. And yet we're effortlessly, you know, having this conversation thanks to free technology and free distribution.
Mm-hmm. So you're out promoting Seventh Son right now. What is there anything in the works or things you can clue us into?
Yeah, sure.
Give us
a
skinny.
Yeah. Oh, good. So
just between us.
Right. Just between us. Yeah.
Who did that? Connie Chung? Was it Connie Chung that did that? I won't tell anybody. Oh.
Yeah. It was just between us. Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly right. Let's see. So I'm doing the Seventh Son kind of, I'm re-releasing, the novel in a brand new recorded format. So this is the print edition of the novel that is being released in a podcast form now. And it kind of represents the creative reboot of the series. I mean, you know, there's like everything that we know that has come before is now kind of considered the beta edition. The non-final edition.
Mm-hmm.
And this is now the definitive Seventh Son experience. Once that concludes next month, I'll take a nap for like an hour. And then I'll start recording and releasing the podcast novel version of Personal Effects Dark Art.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Now, I'd initially pitched, my co-author and the production company that he owns, which is a company called Smith and Tinker, who owns the rights to Personal Effects. I pitched them on doing a podcast novel. I mean, way before the book was released, and they were reluctant to do that because of this really interesting transmedia experience that actually comes with the book. Chuck, you were talking about this, the items that come with the book and the websites you could visit and all that stuff. And they were reluctant to kind of embrace a solely audio experience because that's not the full narrative experience, right?
Well, you know, what's funny though is that I would think that would kind of complement all of this. You know,
well,
so
you're preaching to the converted because I was, I was pitching it.
Listen,
yeah.
JC, and you should do this audio novel thing. It's great.
have you heard a podcast in JC?
No, why don't you tell me about it? I am eager to learn.
Yeah. So after the initial release of Personal Effects Dark Art, and I think really, frankly, it was like, you know, a window of a couple of months had passed, right? Where, you know, we were probably where our most, you know, dedicated sales were occurring. I repitched the idea. They said, sure. So now I'm happy to say that, you know, this, you know, the manuscript of the book will be released in podcast form in early 2010. While that's happening, I have some other creative things that I'm working on. One of them is called The 33, which I can tell you about in a minute. The other one, I've got at least two novel ideas. One of them is a supernatural thriller. The other one's a techno thriller that I'm really eager to dive into. I'm blessed to say that, you know, Seventh Son is represented by a film agent who was able to get it optioned to Warner Brothers. So I have a relationship with a film agent now, and I've got a couple of film treatments, like screenplay treatments, that I will polish and send to him next year too. So, you know, it's a lot of, you know, who knows what's going to happen or if any of it will stick. But I'm going to try to be stay as busy as possible.
Swing with the movie thing.
Thanks, dude. Okay. Yeah, we'll see if it happens.
I think we talked about this on Twitter a long time ago, but who would you want to play some of the clones?
Queen Latifah.
He had that answer a little too quickly. Did you notice that?
I was actually thinking of Sinbad. Okay.
Well, so you know, well, there's this big disconnect. There's like this kind of schism. I mean, I make it sound like it's so much more, you know, kind of divisive than it actually is. But there are Seven Sun fans who think that the eight characters, because you have seven human clones and then you have the villainous John Alpha, mm-hmm, should be played by eight different people. And then there's the camp that believes that, kind of like the Nutty Professor or Multiplicity, you should have one character playing all eight roles.
Mm.
How do you guys fall? How do you fall on that?
I'm in the second camp. I think it's one character, one actor playing all the characters.
Mm-hmm. What about you? What about you, Craig?
I could see where it should be. It could be one actor, but I'll be honest with you. I think having seven or eight different people, will add, make the conversation a little bit, or the dialogue a little bit more dynamic in the movie.
Well, a good actor can rise to that challenge.
Yeah, Eddie Murphy.
well, you know, it's actually, well, Craig, I'm inclined to agree with you, because it would certainly reduce the budget of the movie, because all you're doing is kind of, you know, putting prosthetics on people's, not that I've given great thought to this.
Yeah, right. They wake at night.
Right, yeah, like he's masturbating to the idea. it's like, you know, you could have eight different guys and put prosthetics on their faces to make them look identical, right? Or, you know, kind of like to give them those similar features. So I'm like, I'm halfway there with you, but Chuck, I think I'm more in your camp, because it would just be so cool
Just love to see like Nicolas Cage doing Kilroy?
Oh my God. So when people ask me, you know, it's like, well, who do you think? I always come up with this unconventional answer. Are you familiar with the comedian Ryan Reynolds?
Not by name, but I may have seen.
Okay. So he was in the movie Van Wilder, okay? Mm-hmm, he was also in the movie Blade 3. Okay. He was in the remake of, oh my God, like I'm just getting crickets over here. He was also in the
He was Deadpool. Is that what you're talking about?
And he was Deadpool. That's exactly right.
Okay.
From the X-Men Origins Wolverine movie, and he was in the remake of the Amityville Horror. So anyway, like, this guy is like sexy, lean.
He's also going to be the Green Lantern.
No.
Yes.
Oh, well, then that movie has got a better chance of rocking than when there were rumors of Jack Black being. The last rumor I heard about Green Lantern about like 5 years ago, and I'm like, screw it.
Look,
I'm never going to.
I'm going to rock this place. I can see him talking to him.
Yeah, yeah. Listen here, Sinestro. Yeah.
Guardians, look, I'm going to do it. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So Ryan Reynolds, who's a handsome man. He's young. He's athletic, and there's like this comedy that he was in which he wore a fat suit. So I'm thinking, nice match for Kilroy 2.0. All right. Uh-huh. Yeah. So he's, you know, I'm thinking maybe him. Now, this doesn't mean that I wouldn't kick Brad Pitt out of the bed for eating crackers, or Will Smith, and if they wanted to make it Jane Alpha and hire Angelina Jolie, that's just fine with me.
That's the twist. The it's Jane Alpha, and all the clones are men.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. No, I can see Ryan. When you said comedy, it didn't register with me. I know. Yeah, Ryan Reynolds. Yeah, he was Deadpool, and like I said, he's going to be. He was supposed to be they were supposed to do a Deadpool movie, and he kind of backed out of that when Green Lantern came up.
Well, it's probably a bigger check, so I don't blame him.
I don't know. I've always liked Green Lantern. I think that'd be cool to do.
Oh, I agree. He's what Green Lantern. I'm such a DC comics geek. I love that character. The question is it going to be like Hal Jordan? Is it going to be Kyle Rayner?
I think it's supposed to be Hal Jordan.
How do you guys feel about them bringing Hal Jordan back to life?
Was he dead?
Oh, man. So you're a Marvel?
Yeah, Marvel. I'm actually more of a DC guy in the past, but I like, there's a lot of things to like about Marvel, either of them, really. But I'm down with that. I think it'd be cool. I'm down with that.
All right. Okay. Well, if you're signing off on it, then I'll reconsider my position, because I was so pissed off when they brought him back.
Well, you know, you got to start somewhere with the Green Lantern. So,
yeah. Okay, all right. So anyway, Ryan Reynolds. Have Whatever, you guys Craig. Given any thought, or do you care?
What's that?
Do you guys have any thoughts one way or another?
Not at this point, no. I'm going to have to go add a few movies to my Netflix queue, obviously.
I think Ryan Reynolds.
Like other actors.
I'm just trying to think, who was that? Was somebody mentioned on Twitter? It was the guy that's in, he's in the A-Team movie coming up. I think he plays Face. I hate this because I'm bringing it up and I have no idea.
Welcome. This is what I do all the time.
Give Will Wheaton a call.
That would be cool. But no,
that would be cool and different. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I got to ask you a question.
Now, boy, now that's a ringing endorsement, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh.
No, Bradley, your ass doesn't Bradley, look fat in that dress.
Yeah. Bradley Cooper. That's who I was thinking of.
Yeah. I don't know him. I'll have to look him up. Okay.
Yeah, go look him up there. So, anyway, I want to ask you a question. Now, you know, you've made some film appearances, at least one that I've seen on YouTube.
Wow, I guess I missed a classic.
Yeah, you missed a classic. You know what? It totally reminded me, and I think I mentioned this to you but once before, was it reminded me of a video we did for an English class. And I kind of directed it, and I edited it. And I edited it in a way I would edit a podcast now, but I had like two VCRs and a third one was recording, and we were editing and doing, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff. We took this novel and we doctored it up where it was a mix between the novel and Back to the Future, where we would go back in the past and witness events in the book. And I had the fire going behind my little 78 Honda Civic and the whole work, you know, the neighbors were coming out, going, why are you lighting the street on fire?
Awesome.
we're putting a glow stick in the trunk, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So your video reminded me of that so much. I went looking for mine. I couldn't find it. So tell us about your video that you made.
Yes. Well, I got a wild hair up my rear end last year and decided to release on YouTube some fan created Star Wars. Star Trek movie that me and a buddy in high school. This was way back in high school. Recorded now. We built a Star Trek Enterprise bridge in my basement, which had peeling walls and like you could see the bare bricks.
I love the steampunk computers, by the way, the typewriters.
Oh yeah, and the computers were like they were all kind of propped up by milk crates, right? Yeah. Put on planks of plywood, and all of the computer keyboards were like, you know, Commodore VIC 20s. it's wretched. If you're looking at it from purely an aesthetic point of view, this was an absolutely wretched idea. And since he and I were the only guys who were participating in the film, there was two things involved. Was that, you know, the cast, like I had to play several characters. Mm-hmm. including an alien that, like, it's like, well, we have to make him an alien, so we'll just put an Afghan on your head. And the navigator. And not only that, but the limitations also meant that there could only be one person in a shot at the same time, right?
Yeah.
Because the other guy was holding the camera.
There's no tripod.
There's absolutely no tripod, no steady shots here at all. And so we found ourselves,
kind of flares, by the way,
lens flares.
And so we were aboard the USS Proxima, which apparently looks a lot like the Starship Enterprise in the movies, like the NCC 1701, like the original Enterprise from the movies. Mm-hmm. What's that? Oh, Proxima.
Cool name, by the way.
Thanks. I think I probably saw it in a Spanish dictionary or something. Hell, I know.
Proxima.
Yeah, right. It sounds spiffy.
It sounds like a medication. Take Proxima.
may cause loss of hair and penis.
If you have a condition lasting more than 4 hours, consult your doctor. I have a condition. My side aches from laughing at this video.
Please take this Proxima.
And we basically kind of completely ripped off the plot line of the Wrath of Khan. Right. Because what we were doing is that we would record our stuff, right? And then because the Wrath of Khan VCR tape was in the VCR connected to like a 12-inch TV, we would cut and we would record the TV for our special effects shots.
Oh, with the camera. I see. Okay.
With the camera. So there was no like fancy double VCR splicing like you were doing, Craig. We were like filming the television with the glare on it and everything. Yeah,
that's funny.
Now so like that takes place in like 1990 whatever, like 92 or 91, I don't remember. And then it sat on a video cassette for years until I got my first iMac in like 2001. And we had always, my buddy and I had always wanted to like, you know, do like put this through a video toaster and you know, cut out all the flubs and add music and sound effects and cut to quote like quote far better, you know, clips of these special effects.
That was in the script actually.
Right.
In future, instead of far better act, yeah.
Instead of filming the TV, because we were like, this is all gonna be temporary. We're just gonna film the TV now so we know what shot to use later. And
Lucas said too. Look how many different copies he can sell. Just think about it. Hutch, you're going to be selling like the director's gold extended cut in a few years.
Oh, I love it. So I then like I took it upon myself to actually polish this the best I could, and it still turned out terrible. But it was charming. It's charming with the sound and the special effects and the music and the cuts to the quote real special effects. And so and I put it online on YouTube last year and kind of dug it up just today actually. I tweeted about it because it just kind of was on my mind and I thought I'd share it again with people.
That's awesome. You know, speaking of the one character in the shot type thing, well, we had several guys helping out, but the one thing that cracked us up, even, I mean, the whole English class lost it, was there's a part of the book where the kids were jumping off like a leap of faith kind of thing into this pond and from high up in a tree. And so we had this dummy. Nobody was going to jump into the ground. So we took this dummy and we had a head attached to it with a hat. So I'm in the tree and I've got this hat on and I'm dressed like the dummy. And I give this motion like I'm about to jump, you know, and I kind of make that motion like I'm jumping. Well, then we cut. I take the dummy and I throw him out of the tree. Well, it's funny because the way the dummy hit the ground, the head fell off. I didn't realize this, but after we went to edit back up, I would lay on the ground and would get up like I'm brushing myself off. Well, then when we edited, it looked like the head fell off and they popped back on.
Just a flesh wound.
Oh my God. You know, you'll think about it. We were content creators even then. We were getting our content on.
Yep, that's right. That is right.
Oh, I'm going to have to keep that in mind, Craig, when something doesn't work on Technorama. Ah, Craig's head just fell off again.
Yeah.
Throw the dummy! Throw the dummy!
That's the new meme, right? Like when something goes wrong, throw the dummy!
Yeah. Well, you know, two guys that I went to high school with that had something to do with the video, I've seen them since. And I was like, dude, do you have a copy of that by chance? Because I don't know where mine's going. And he's like, no, I'm glad I don't either. I was like, what are you talking about? That's YouTube gold.
Right. Well, it's so funny because I mean this USS Proxima, and all you have to do is go to YouTube and probably, you know, search for USS Proxima.
It'll be on our blog today.
Well, there's two parts to it. Well, there's actually three. There's like, you know, the first half of the video, the second half of the video, and then like outtakes. And in the outtakes video, you'll actually see that footage of me, you know, filming the TV screen with with the proton torpedoes or whatever.
Oh, that's awesome.
But Right. But the thing that cracks me up is that, you know, we clearly, like, we didn't have two nickels to rub together, and we knew that what we were doing was ridiculous. And when I was editing it years later, I knew that what I was doing was ridiculous. So I posted online, this is just supposed to be goofy, fun, charming. And then the blog comments video. Are like this is why I think science fiction for the future of science fiction. This thing is terrible with awful production values. I'm just kind of thinking to myself, man, it's two kids in a basement. Relax. Just have some fun.
That's right.
Did anybody else pick up some strange audio right there?
I did too. Did you hear that, JC?
Am I sounding like a Cylon?
Yeah, Cylon on LSD.
Yeah. This is my ISP throttling me.
Are you serious?
Probably. So let me unplug my USB and plug it in and see if that works. Okay.
He probably just gave us the, you know, most important piece of information a human has heard before.
I'm waving my hand in front of my face going, no, it still looks normal.
And that's why I decided to save the world.
Yeah. And with that information, he told us and he stepped out and was killed by a bus and we'll never hear it again.
Am I sounding better now?
Much.
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe it may not be my ISP. It just might be this USB headset. I mean, at the 50 minute mark, it'll freak.
That was a cool sound effect that we'll have to work into a podcast somewhere.
By your command.
You're a big deal author now. You can afford a new headset and a mic.
Get the $9.95 special, not the $6.95 special.
This thing cost me $40, 40 freaking bucks, and it does this. I don't understand.
Hmm. Well, sure. tell the listener where they can find you.
Yes, if your poor listeners who have been subjected to me humiliating myself about USS Proxima and going on like a windbag about Twitter and social media, right? If you guys out there are interested in experiencing some free science fiction, novel goodness, visit my website, jchutchins.net, where you will find free audiobooks, free serialized PDFs, free songs created by a character in the book. There's lots of free stuff there. And if you enjoy what you listen, you can pick up a copy of Seventh Son Descent, available in bookstores everywhere.
Yay.
Thank you very much, JC. Hey, it's been a real treat hanging out with you, and we wish you all the best. Next time you have a news-breaking story like a book or a movie, or you're looking for some actors to put in that movie, hey, we'll be extras.
Yeah. Remember us when we're when you're big shot.
You guys are handsome men, and dashing. And Chuck, you are a dashing man.
What did Murr call me? Devilishly handsome.
I was asking which podcast does he think he's on.
you guys, who's going to get killed first.
Yeah. Right. Well, you guys are awesome. I mean, I thank you so much for spending so much time talking to me, and I hope your listeners got something good out of it too. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Hey, that takes us to the end of the show. If you want to get in touch with us, leave us comments or send JC email. You know where to find him. He told you, jchutchins.net. You can find us at chuckchat.com. Call the listener line. We're always looking for more insightful stuff there. 206-222-2428 or email us, technorama@chuckchat.com. You know the score. Put #101 on Twitter. We will find you. There is no hiding.
We're looking for you.
Thank you once again to JC Hutchins for joining us for this wonderful interview. And I told you, there was no script. So whatever Craig does in editing, we'll never know, including the special effects.
Oh, you'll know.
Until next time, tell a friend about Technorama. And Hutch, would you give us a binary high five?
10110111.
Whoa, too much.
It's like 132 or something, isn't it?